Welcome to a very, very compressed episode of Uncanny Treks, where we try to look at an absurd number of Avengers comics. We're not just covering the event Infinity, we are covering the prelude to Infinity, and even the prelude to the prelude to Infinity, which is something like Avengers 12 through 23 and six issues of Infinity. We're going to leave out the new Avengers tie-ins, talk about those in a second separate episode. I'm Bob in Cascadia, that's Matt in the Southland. Matt, are you feeling compressed this morning?
Feeling pretty compressed, Bob. Very compressed. Man, that was a lot of comics to read. You gave me... That's some homework, Bob. You gave me a lot of homework to do.
I gave you a lot of homework.
I was back in middle school.
We're gonna ease off it a little after this. We're just going to go back to doing one or two trades a week after this. This is nuts.
Yeah, folks, if you're attacking Infinity, just keep in mind that there's a lot going on, and you will be confused throughout it. But Hickman does a good job of coming back around and explaining things a little bit more concisely. It's almost like you get surprised at the end. You're like, oh, that all ties together with all this other stuff. And then if you do decide to go back and maybe reread it or re-skim it, you'll understand everything so much better. It's not something you could just sit there and casually read and be like, oh, yeah, okay. It's not that kind of comic. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, I think this is my third time through it. I think I read it within a year or so of it coming out. And then I read it a few years ago, maybe 3 years ago, when I actually finished the Hickman run, which I was reading at first when it came out. And then I just fell off during the other huge crossover that we'll have to compress into one. Time runs out. But on the third time, yeah, it reads pretty easily. And I would say, listeners, reading the electronic copies of the single issues is probably the way to go. Because I'm not sure in the trades if you would get all the recap pages and the cast pages. But to me, those are essential in following where the story's at.
Definitely. You need those recap pages just to keep in mind what we're going to be focusing on that particular issue. It's like, all right, you're only focused on Tony Stark and Captain America in this issue. Just what they were doing, that part of the plot, not the entire world-spanning piece or universe-spanning piece that some of the individual issues cover.
Exactly. Well, to dive into it, so we're going to look at issues 12 through 17 first, and these are written by Hickman, but they're also co-written by Nick Spencer, a guy who's become much more famous in the ensuing years, and indeed somewhat infamous for his Amazing Spider-Man, although not so much his Amazing Spider-Man run, but more for his Captain America run. I like most of what I've read by Spencer, not everything, but most of what I've read by Spencer I've liked. He's also going to co-write a spinoff called Avengers World with Hickman that we're going to also look at in a super compressed time frame in a month or two, although that'll be a lot easier to get through than this, I think. But yeah, Spencer's co-writing 12 through 17, and then to start with, we're looking at a two-part prelude to Prelude to Infinity. That's Evolve. It's a story in Avengers 12 and 13, and it's drawn by Mike Diodato. And Matt, what goes down in Evolve?
Well, Bob, in Evolve, it's a savage land romp where the Avengers rescue the Children of the Sun from the High Evolutionary, and Hyperion and Thor have a serious heart-to-heart about co-parenting. So I was really excited, Bob, that we were going into the savage land here. Usually savage land's more an X-Men thing. This is cool. We go into the savage land. These Children of the Sun, they are part of the whole Builders thing when they were creating all this stuff, when they dropped all those things on Earth from Mars people. So even me talking about it, I sound like a crackhead. It's insane. Anyway, so the Children of the Sun are there. They're evolving. And you have the High Evolutionary, who I've always liked as a character, Bob. I don't know why.
Oh, you like the High Evolutionary.
I don't know why. I don't know if it's the costume, the look, just the idea.
It can't be the costume. It's an absurd costume.
It's pretty ridiculous, I admit it is. But I was glad that he makes an appearance here. But tell me a little bit about this, Bob. You ever relate to Hyperion not having kids? That was a big part of this issue.
Yeah. I can't say I especially relate to Hyperion, even though he has something of a rationalist worldview that I also aspire to. I don't say I achieve, but I aspire to. It is interesting that Hyperion in this comics, and you saying this is making me think, and I hadn't thought about this very explicitly, but he's basically playing the role of Reed in the Future Foundation, of the hyper-rationalist scientist has to deal with gifted children.
Right.
So that's a good connection to make. And then I also like your point about the Avengers in the Savage Land being unlikely. I definitely had not thought about that. And you're right. You can clearly tell this is Hickman's 80s X-Men fandom, where there's a couple really signature Savage Land stories, especially, I think, Rogue and Magneto in the Savage Land. And obviously, this is not the same story as Rogue and Magneto in the Savage Land, but yeah, when you say that, it's, oh yeah, this is more evidence of Hickman's 80s X-Men fandom coming through.
Oh yeah, it definitely seeps through. And Bob, in these issues, we have Iron Man, who had the ugliest costume I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, you hated this,
this
right?
This costume looks, he looks like Red Tornado. That's the issue. He looks like Red Tornado, and I'm like, why is Red Tornado in this comic? But it's Guardians of the Galaxy Iron Man or something when he went off with them.
So this is Marvel Now, right? And one of the things, I don't know if you remember about Marvel Now, but it really struck me when Marvel Now was happening was how so many of the books went more science fictional. You had Iron Man joining Guardians of the Galaxy, and then also in his own book, you had Iron Man doing stuff with a moon colony. I think that was the story Fatal Frontier that Kieran Gillen and Al Ewing were writing. And then you had Thor going in space to fight the God Butcher in the start of Jason Aaron's run. And then you had Hickman really leveling up the Avengers to cosmic stuff and Infinity. So that it is just funny how science fictional the early stages of Marvel Now were.
Tony Stark appears by proxy through an Iron Man robot, but it's his voice coming through, so he can be in two places at once.
We've seen this a little bit in earlier issues of this run, and it seems to be a little bit, yeah, Hickman trying to playfully explain how Tony is in the main Avengers book, also doing Illuminati stuff, also doing Guardians of the Galaxy stuff, also doing his stuff in the solo book with his brother and the moon colony. So he's trying to solve the Wolverine or Batman problem of how does Tony do all this.
Yeah, he's multitasking, Bob.
He's multitasking. And then, Matt, speaking of teaching, we do have other teachers for the Children of the Sun, but we have Superior Spider-Man with very inappropriate teachings for the Children of the Sun.
Yes. Okay, strangely, Spider-Man doesn't appear too often in these issues. He'll be in the panels and the background and stuff, but I keep forgetting this is Dr. Octopus Spider-Man.
It's one of those things of Hickman will have Superior Spider-Man being slightly creepy.
Correct.
But if you didn't know about it, it's not creepy enough. He's also a little creepy to Spider-Woman in these issues. But if you didn't know it's Otto, you would keep reading and not think too much about it.
Exactly. And that, I think that's the point of anybody that's picking this up is not going to have a clue unless they really are following all of Marvel.
Yeah.
But well, there's two instances right there, though, where we have to have some prior knowledge, really, to understand what's going on here. Why Iron Man isn't present? Why is Superior Spider-Man such a weird... It's interesting to...
We also get spotlights. I mean, spotlights is maybe too generous a term, but we get some time with two of the more minor Avengers. Traditionally, they're major Avengers, but in the Hickman run, just because of the necessity of events, they're a little bit minor, and we get to see Hawkeye and Spider-Woman tanning in the Savage Land. Really, you know, shades of the Marvel swimsuit edition.
Yeah, and if you look closely at the image, you'll see there's something in the background and the Sun Children are climbing it. In each panel, they get higher and higher, and it's more dangerous. It's interesting. And there is one scene, Bob. This is the only cool thing in this entire series with Hawkeye. On page 22, Hawkeye has this action where he takes an arrow and he shoots it through a Triceratooth tiger. You heard me right, folks. Triceratooth tiger.
Triceratooth tiger. It reminds me of one of the funniest Kyle Baker lines ever when he was talking about writing Hawkman for Wednesday Comics. And he's, the thing with Hawkman is you have to give him problems that can be solved by hitting them with a mace.
Exactly. There's not much you can do with Hawkeye. And they did well here, though. He definitely shoots that Triceratooth tiger.
With an arrow. So all of that was in issue 12, Evolve. We've also got issue 13, Strong. Was there anything you wanted to say about issue 13 Strong before we move on to Prelude to Infinity?
The way that this issue is framed is interesting because you get to like 3/4 through and this thing has evolved, this giant creature thing, robot, I don't know what it is. It's some ugly looking thing. Anyway, it's about to take out Hyperion and Thor, and then you transition to them sitting talking to each other and you're like, well, what happened to the big robot thing? And on the last panel, you see the big robot with a hole completely through it where I guess Hyperion shot his lasers. So, it was nothing. I just murdered that thing.
To keep moving to the four-part prelude to Infinity, this is Avengers 14 through 17. And here we've got, like we said, Hickman and Nick Spencer writing. We've got Stefano Caselli, who's the main artist on X-Men Red with Al Ewing. Here he's drawing the four issues. And then, Matt, do you want to run us through a summary of all four issues?
Sure, Bob. You've got Pod, the weapon Ex-Nihilo sent to Earth and that AIM captured, escapes AIM Island and defeats the Avengers in Perth, causing the Avengers to resolve to get bigger. So the Avengers definitely need to get bigger, Bob, but we don't mean size-wise. We mean, like, they needed more members.
They need more members.
And they need to be stronger.
They need to be stronger. And it also is a little bit of a lead in to, okay, you got to take on the cosmic scale.
They're taking on something bigger here than they're used to.
We've got the four issues here. 14 is Signal. 15 is Sent and Received. 16 is To the End. And 17 is To the Light. I did just want to make a couple of comparisons here. So you haven't read Hickman's Image series, East of West, with Nick Giovanna,
I read
right?
one trade a long time ago, I think, that you gave me.
Just rereading this, there's the tutoring scenes, which we've seen some interactions in earlier issues between Nightmask. Pretty sure it's Nightmask, but I can never remember. Nightmask and Starbrand. And their tutoring scenes, where Nightmask is tutoring Starbrand, really remind me of dynamics in East of West. But of course, also very reminiscent of Hyperion's relationship to the Children of the Sun, very reminiscent of the Future Foundation.
Right.
Yeah, and then the other connection I wanted to make was Pod, the super robot, the weapon that Exanila created and that AIM captured. It very much reminds one, I think, of Terminator, but even more specific to comics, I think it very much reminds me of the Fury, the undefeatable robot from Alan Moore and Alan Davis's Captain Britain run. I think I mentioned that in an earlier episode, and I think that was that series was maybe an influence on the Terminator. So yes, Pod is like Terminator, but he's also, I think, even more like the Fury from Alan Moore and Alan Davis's Captain Britain.
Yeah, and Pod here, Bob, he's defeated by AIM. They flat out just stick him in some dimension where he can't move or something.
Yeah, yeah.
He beats up the Avengers, but then AIM comes in and takes care of it.
And it is interesting how these issues are highlighting AIM and the Savage Land and the Children of the Sun, stuff that's totally going to fall out in the main crossover, right? But it's got to check in on that stuff before we go do crazy stuff.
Exactly, which is why you've had to keep up with the series pretty carefully to figure out all this. There's so many moving pieces. It's insane. Yeah.
My last question to you about the Prelude to Infinity, Matt, were you surprised? I remember in 2013-14, whenever I was reading this for the first time, being really surprised that Exanilo, Abyss, Starbrand, and Nightmask were all just Avengers. In hindsight, maybe it's obvious, but when I started the series, it was like, oh, they were maybe building them up to be villains or building them up to do something else, but just to have them all brought on and basically the same issue as Avengers, I remember being very surprised by.
Yeah, the Avengers just doesn't... I mean, these are very powerful characters, yes. These are your cosmic characters that are going to be on their side, but at the same time, you're just trusting them with a lot.
Yeah, there is a real sense of, can they be trusted?
Right. And, I mean, yeah. And they just go for it. They're like, sure, join, and they're okay.
Well, and this is maybe getting ahead of ourselves, but I guess I'll go ahead and ask, since it's natural to ask here. All right, so they... If I remember right, they do a lot with Exanilo in the Infinity crossover.
A ton. Abyss, they don't do nothing. I forget she's there. I kept mixing her up with Black Swan in my head. You can see why. And Starbrand is always in the background, it seems. They're always building him up. And then Nightmask is his mentor. Yeah. So that's the whole idea. So really the only waste of potential here, I think, is Abyss.
In a way, I think you're right. You do just have to remember that Black Swan's imprisoned on Earth and Starbrand or Abyss is out in the cosmos fighting. But yeah, I agree with you about the visual similarity of the characters. And then with Starbrand and Nightmask, you're right that they're always around in the background. And the implication is that especially Starbrand and Abyss are heavy hitters in the war. But yeah, like you're saying, we just don't see them do all that much in the main crossover, which I'm not necessarily criticizing, but it is just... an interesting dynamic if we make such a big deal of these four new members. And they're all always in the conflict, but it's really only Exanilo who comes off as super plot relevant.
Correct. Maybe they had better ideas and better intentions with Starbrand. I don't know. Yeah, weird character, in my opinion. I don't really understand the power set that much, other than there's stars.
That's, I think, a problem a lot with cosmic characters. Maybe I'm being unfair. Listeners can yell at me on X the Everything app if I'm being unfair. But it might be more of a problem, especially with Marvel cosmic characters, is that tend to have vague power sets.
Yeah, you just shoot energy out of your hands or something. I don't know what he actually is able to do, what explosion he can make. You get that from a lot of these characters. I know Exanilo can do a lot of cool stuff as far as creating. Another character that comes into play with this is Mother.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Captain Universe.
I don't even know what that character... I have no clue. Am I in Mother?
You are giving Mother a little bit of your energy, a minuscule amount of your energy, without even knowing it, Matt.
Okay, that's what I need to know. Okay, gotcha. Makes sense. So I'm just telling you, if you're reading this, folks, and you're not used to the cosmic stuff, you're going to have to get used to it if you want to enjoy it. A lot of it, you just have to say, they shoot lasers.
All right, listeners. So I'm about to ask Matt to read the craziest plot summary that probably he'll ever have to read on this podcast, or at least for the most number of issues that he'll ever have to read. So we're going to talk about, we'll go issue by issue, but we figured it would not make sense to do individual issue summaries in this context.
No.
So we're just gonna give you one big summary for all the issues. And we're talking about Infinities number 1 through 6, and then we are talking about Avengers number 18 through 23. Infinity 1 through 6, Avengers 18 through 23. Matt, what goes down in the plot of Infinity?
So Bob, the Builders go mad and launch a war on the universe, which the great galactic empires meet in a World War II style grand alliance with some contributions from half of the Avengers led by Captain America, while Iron Man and the rest of the Illuminati remain on Earth to prepare last-ditch defenses and continue to play the Game of Worlds, a weakening of Earth that allows Thanos and his Black Order to attack Earth with a special focus on a secret the humans are hiding. That's not too bad, Bob. So if anybody needs any additional context, folks, there's just a lot of stuff going on and the Avengers are having to handle it.
Yeah. Although it is pretty good at dividing the focus pretty clearly between the Avengers and the Galactic Empires out in space, the Avengers back on Earth, and then Thanos' machinations.
Correct. Yes, it's very clear what's going on within the issues. I never really got that confused in that area. Hickman does a great job of it. It's not really pacing. I guess it's more spacing, in a sense. Everything out.
One of the reasons I make such a big deal about this is I remember being frustrated at trying to get the library to buy copies of this in 2013, 2014, whenever it was. Because the way they initially published this was, they were doing like little 5-6 issue collections of Avengers and New Avengers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there was Avengers Volume 3, Prelude to Infinity, which was the issues we just covered. And then there was Avengers Volume 4, Infinity, which was none of the main series and just the Avengers issues that we're going to cover. And then there was also a New Avengers Infinity trade that we'll look at separately. And then there was a big hardcover called Infinity that had the Infinity series and all the Avengers and New Avengers issues, but there was no other way to get the Infinity issues. And so I remember being very confused by that initially, because initially I didn't try to read the Infinity stories. I just tried to read the Prelude to Infinity and Avengers Volume 4 Infinity and New Avengers Volume 2 Infinity without the main series. I remember being very confused.
How'd that work out for you, Bob?
Not well, not well. Then another little amusing detail, which is also why we did, I think I mentioned this last week, but why we did Infinity Gauntlet, is much later, much, much later, they did a massive omnibus, which was basically just that Infinity hardcover with the miniseries, all the Avengers and New Avengers tie-in issues. But they also threw in Infinity Gauntlet, and they called it Infinity by Starlin and Hickman.
I understand the point in us reading Gauntlet just to have a familiarity with Thanos and the stones, because they were destroyed in the previous, but I don't feel like it ties directly into this in any way.
And in some way, I think it was just, they were trying to promote that Infinity by Starlin and Hickman, maybe around the time of the two movies,
right?
In some ways it makes sense because the film is heavily drawing on Infinity Gauntlet, but with Thanos invading Earth, there's a little bit of influence from Infinity on the movies.
For sure.
And especially with the Black Order characters.
Okay, I had a question. This is really going to show what I mentioned last week, which may be shocking to some people. I haven't actually seen that Avengers film. It's weird for me to even say it. So Black Order does appear in that.
They do.
But it's not all of them, is it? Is it one or two of them?
It's most of them.
I want to go back and watch it now just to see them, because they're cool.
It is worth stressing, if folks don't know, because I was confused at the time, because I had not read, when I first read Infinity, I had not read Infinity Gauntlet. But, and not that you need to, but just, I didn't have any context on Thanos is my point. And so I had no idea if the Black Order was new or not when I read this, because to credit to Hickman, they feel pretty natural extensions.
They do. So they're not new?
No, they are new.
Oh, they are new. Oh, wow. Okay. That's actually impressive. I figured it was something they just dug up from a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, to plunge into it, Matt, Infinity number one, we've got art by Jim Chung on the first and the last issue. And I didn't know this, but he drew the original Illuminati series that Bendis did, that miniseries. Uh-huh. But he's probably most famous for co-creating the Young Avengers. That's probably what most people fondly remember him for. Just to plunge into issue number one, Matt. So, two things. On page number 17, we get our cast page, which shows you how big this issue is, that we go 17 pages before we get the cast page. There's 15 pages of prelude. So on 17, we get the cast page. And I was going to ask if you had any thoughts about this first cast page. We won't do this for all of them, but it seemed to make sense to think about it for the first one.
Not really. I know the Illuminati, they're including Black Swan and the Illuminati for some reason, which I'm okay with, whatever, because she's part of that group.
I think Marvel Wiki says is a mistake. And sure, in some ways it's a mistake, but it's also not. It makes sense just visually.
She's connected with that group. And then you've got the Builders. Space Knights. I don't have a clue who Space Knights are, but they were in the background of a lot of... They never really play a huge role in this. Other than just fighting stuff. And you'll see them, the Space Knights are tearing things up. I'm like, okay, great. I don't even know who these people are. But
Matt, do you know Rom the Space Knight?
I've heard of Rom, yes. But apparently this is Starshine, Firefall, Iron, Terminator, Pulsar. How you got to have a Terminator the Space Knight? Give me a break.
Nah, it rules, man. It rules. So Rom the Space Knight was a licensed comic that Marvel did, I think maybe in the late 70s, but more in the 80s. Oh, and here's a connection. Do you remember that X-Men Classics issue that I think you had where it's Storm gets depowered and she and Rogue are running around the Mississippi?
Yes, I do remember that.
Do you remember that they're vague, shadowy villains? Those are the Diorites, that's what they are.
Oh.
They're called the Diorites. Those are the Space Knight's big villains. We've also seen them a little bit in Hickman's Fantastic Four, how Black Bolt gets all the wives from other species. One of those was the Diorites, but it was minor. I don't necessarily expect you would remember it.
So Hickman has nostalgia for these characters, is that what I'm understanding?
He does, and it's worth saying that Rom was an action figure that was pretty popular, and I think the writer Bill Mantlow, his kid liked it.
Oh.
And so he was like, hey Marvel, my kid likes this, it's cool, you should get the rights and let me write it. And they did, and so Bill Mantlow built this whole, because it was just Rom, he built this whole mythos of Space Knights and Dire Wraiths. And had a really successful comic that people fondly remember. I haven't read any of it. I need to. I want to. But I just never have. I think it ran 75 issues. But then eventually, whatever toy company took the rights back. And it was one of those deals where Marvel has the rights to everything Mantlow created in the series, but not Rom himself. So Rom occasionally, they get the rights back and he'll show up in a Marvel comic. But more often than not, they'll use other Space Knights or other Diorites. Although it's not super common. Hence your lack of familiarity with it.
Going back to the page, though, Bob, you got the Avengers, and you have a pretty long list, and you also have the four new Avengers that we mentioned in the previous issue. Then you got the Inhumans. Gorgon, Karnak, Lockjaw, Medusa, Maximus, and Triton. Really, you only focus on Medusa, Maximus, Lockjaw, and Black Bolt. And then at the bottom, you got Abigail Brand, Thanos, and the Skrulls. Wow.
Huge cast. Huge. A couple other things to emphasize. We got Wolverine here, but he's put as an X-Men, not an Avenger, which is interesting. And just for context, this is during the era where we have the split Cyclops and Wolverine teams.
The Schism.
Cyclops is leading his North Korean mutant team, Alpha, the island off San Francisco. Wolverine's back at the mansion. And Storm and Shadowcat are also leaders of the Wolverine team, along with Wolverine. This doesn't matter super much, but it might matter in future issues, so I'll go ahead and emphasize it. On the cast page for the Builders, we see that there are six Builder roles. There's creators, there's engineers, there's caretakers, there's curators, there's ailiffs, and there's gardeners.
Guys, don't worry, because Builders, creators, and Builders, engineers, and curators, and ailiffs, they all look the exact same, so it's so easy to tell them apart.
To go to the Inhumans, right? One of the things this was supposed to do is it was supposed to launch a new Inhuman series written by Matt Fraction. And it was supposed to be Fraction was going to do the Inhumans as Marvel's Game of Thrones.
Okay.
And that I was remember looking forward to that because I really like Fraction. And it never came about. It never happened with Fraction. But it did wind up being done by Charles Soule. And I like Charles Soule. I can't say I liked his Inhumans story, so unfortunately.
Hickman would have been a better choice for that.
He would have, especially with what he built up with Black Bolt in Fantastic Four.
This time during the X-Men, I've read a lot of these issues, and they do allude a lot in those issues to Wolverine being on the Avengers, so a lot of back and forth. That's interesting. I guess this is when he's in charge of that school. He's the headmaster.
He is. He's the headmaster of the Jean Grey School of Higher Learning.
Those are fun issues if you haven't read them.
That's a series in the distant, distant future we maybe should look at. Yeah. The Jason Aaron's Wolverine and the X-Men is really fun.
All right, Bob. Well,
Well, Matt, a few little minor things I wanted to highlight from Infinity Number One, which, like I said, listeners, is a long issue. I didn't know Hawkeye could speak Spanish, which I find really charming. I also find it really charming that the Marvel Wiki thinks this is Arabic. That's interesting. And then we have one of the Black Order, and we'll run down the Black Order in a minute, but one of the Black Order is Corvus Glaive, and his spy discovers that Black Bolt loves one wife, he hates one wife, and he's indifferent to all the rest. And I was very confused. Did that mean that Black Bolt loves Medusa, hates one of the new wives, and is indifferent to the other new wives? Or is it just talking about the new wives, and it's saying that he loves one new wife, he hates one new wife, and he's indifferent to the other new wives? I wasn't sure.
It says, a son of prophecy, the Midnight King, took five wives, Medusa his first, and the others, to gather all the universal inhuman caste under his crown. He loves one, hates one, and cares little for the rest.
I guess from your reading, it make it seem Medusa is the one he loves.
He loves me. Who does he hate? I can't remember.
I don't remember if there's enough. There's certainly not enough here to tell, and I don't think there was enough in Fantastic Four to tell, but maybe I'm forgetting.
I get it mixed up with Londo from Babylon 5, so it doesn't help.
There's a Direwraith wife. There's probably a Kree wife. There's a Space Horse from Power Pack
correct.
Wife.
And then there's a Green Lady. Is that Kroll?
A Skrull wife? Skrull, okay. Skrull. They're all the inhuman versions, to make clear, listeners. It's the inhuman version of a Direwraith. It's the inhuman version of a Skree. The inhuman version of a Space Horse.
And you can tell because they have those forks on their heads.
Exactly. They got the tuning forks. Yeah. Those are important. Just for a meta moment, Sunspot describes what they're going to do in space as Star Wars with much handsomer protagonists, meaning him and Cannonball, which I thought was pretty cute.
Who both play a very minor role in this entire saga. So much so that I forget they're there.
Although they do have that very important role of the everyman, or if you prefer, the droids in Star Wars. It's funny, Bobby thinks he and Sam are going to be Luke and Han, but they're right. Actually 3PO and R2-D2.
That's exactly what they were.
We have the debut of the Black Order on 51 in Infinity One, and it's Corvus Glaive, Proxima Midnight, Black Dwarf, although he'll get renamed Cull Obsidian in the movie because Black Dwarf is not woke. And then we have Ebony Maw, and then we have Supergiant.
Okay, Bob, I didn't know any of these characters other than Ebony Maw. And the only reason I knew Ebony Maw is I play this card game called Marvel Snap, and Ebony Maw is a really powerful character.
I get them mixed up myself. Glaive is the spokesman. I even get that confused because there's the ones who matter are the leader, the spy, and then the chick, Proxima Midnight.
Right.
Those are the ones that matter. The rest are just basically muscle.
Well, the problem I have is that Black Dwarf and Supergiant's names are not, they don't look the way they don't fit their names. Black Dwarf is this giant dude. Looks like a angry rock man. And Supergiant is this lady who can control minds. So help me with that.
Black Dwarf, or Cull Obsidian as he is in the movie, is the powerhouse. And then Supergiant is the most disposable. I don't think she made it to the movie, but like you say, she's a telepath of some sort.
Right.
And then Corvus Glaive, the movie they especially play him up as Thanos' hype man.
Right.
And Ebony Maw is more the spy. We're going to see this more in New Avengers. He's going to be manipulating Doctor Strange for most of the series. Proxima Midnight is Corvus Glaive's wife. And I think she's, even though Black Dwarf or Cull Obsidian is the powerhouse, Proxima Midnight is the most powerful.
She's crazy, insane, powerful, if I remember reading correctly. Going through this, I was going to say. Corvus Glaive reminds me of Desaad.
Oh, very much so, very much so. Although, in fairness to Corvus Glaive, he is a more active and more powerful character than Desaad, but that kind of role of fawning hype man with wrinkled skin.
Exactly how he fits in.
I hadn't thought about that, but Thanos is obviously a Darkseid ripoff. That's his origin, right? Darkseid is so much in DC defined by all his Apocalypton henchmen. Now that I think about this, it's still really impressive how good these designs are and how well Hickman executed them and how well Jim Chung and the other artists execute them. But now that you say that, it makes sense of, this is basically just giving Thanos his Apocalypton henchmen, right? Yeah.
No granny goodness, though, Bob.
Maybe that's what Supergiant's role is. We've cracked it. I did just want to say, listeners, if you're looking at the single issues like we are, they have the reading order for the series on an Infinity Gems checklist on page 55, and I thought that was very cute.
And listeners, if you are reading the single issues and you keep scrolling past the checklist, you'll get this other Silver Surfer comic thing that they were trying out, some new style.
Can we
pause? Let's talk about 818, Avengers Universe. Now, what's fascinating here, Bob, is that we've gone Avengers World. Now we have Avengers Universe. We're escalating.
You don't do Avengers Galaxy or Avengers Super Galaxy or Avengers Galaxy Cluster. You just go straight from Avengers World to Avengers Universe.
They had Avengers Neighborhood.
Avengers Neighborhood, Avengers Block, Avengers Region.
Avengers Village.
So for issues 18 through 23 of Avengers, we've got Lineal Yu drawing. He might be most famous for doing the art for Ultimate Wolverine versus Hulk, a long-delayed comic written by the writer of Lost. He's also famous for doing Superman Birthright with Mark Waid, which, have you ever read that?
I haven't. Everybody says it's the best origin story, and now after you told me about Man of Steel's issues with John Byrne, I probably want to go back and maybe find a better origin to have in my brain.
We should look at it. I don't know if it would make for good podcasting. I did not love it when I read it, but I don't stand confidently by that. I preferred Jeff Johns and Gary Frank's Superman Secret Origin, which came out within a few years. And so a lot of people, myself included, do you really need two Superman origin comics? But do really like Mark Waid and Lineal Yu, so I should give it another shot, probably.
Man, I really have to erase Man of Steel from my head. That makes me sad.
I still want us to look at the John Byrne run at some point in the distant future, just because it was so much a part of our childhoods. I don't think we have to erase it. I think we should just bear in mind that it's ridiculous. The main thing in 18 I wanted to look at, Matt, was also the cast page. We'll get off the cast page, I promise, listeners, but I did want to look at the cast page. So I thought it was interesting that we have, you could call the Space Avengers, they're divvied up between the two different Quinjets or Quin cruisers they're in space in, and then you've also got some free flyers, which I thought was a fun way to do the cast page. It's not really reflected, if I'm remembering right, going through the rest of the crossover, but I thought that was fun here.
It is neat because it gives them assigned seats on which bus to get on and stuff. It's funny. Quinn Cruiser 1 is Captain America, Bruce, you're next to him, Shang-Chi, Spider-Woman, Manifold, and Black Widow. Okay, you're good. All right, that seems like it'll be all right.
So, Matt, I've got a question. Is Tony Stark such a control freak that he determines this, or is he sexist and he's no Captain Marvel or Spider-Woman? It's your job. You draw up the seating charts for the Quinn Cruisers.
I'm pretty sure Tony Stark probably had this planned in advance. They had already created this way ahead of time. Tony had in his mind before all this. This is like a contingency thing, Bob. He's had this going for a long time. Now, the free flying is what cracks me up, because it's Thor, Hyperion, Ex-Nihilo, and then Falcon. The first three I'm okay with, but Falcon's flying, free-flying, come on.
No offense to Sam Wilson, who I like a lot, but maybe you should have left him on Earth.
You got two gods, and then Ex-Nihilo, who's, we don't even understand his powers at this point, but then Falcon, he just should be flying in space.
It's Matt, and I think we're going to mock Falcon's outfit later.
Oh, we are. We totally are. We totally are, yes, for sure.
Yeah, that's coming, listeners. So steal yourself. And then the other thing on the cast page that's worth noting is we have our Galactic Council. And I just wanted to run through these. So you've got Gladiator.
I know.
At this point, he's both the Emperor of the Shi'ar and the head of the Imperial Guard. And then you've got Jason of Spartax. Do you know who that is, Matt?
No, Bob. I don't have a clue who Jason of Spartax is.
So he's going to be a treacherous guy, right?
It doesn't have any effect on me because I don't know who he is.
He's Peter Quill, Star-Lord's dad.
Oh, okay.
They decided for the movies that's not interesting enough to have him be a treacherous space monarch. So they make Ego the Living Planet, Peter Quill, Star-Lord's dad,
right,
in the movies. But in the comics, it's Jason, the Emperor of the Spartax Empire. And they're in older Marvel stuff, Spartax is not such a big deal, I think. But around this era where they're trying to make the Guardians of the Galaxy and the movie universe a big thing, they really take special care to have the Spartax be in all the big galactic crossovers.
When he does, I guess it's essentially cause more chaos than necessary. I had no clue who he was, so it didn't really have any impact on me.
Yeah.
Screw
and
you,
then,
Hickman.
I think you know the other ones, right? We've got
three Supreme Intelligence. I know Annihilus, of course, and I know the Queen of the Brood. So I was good there.
and the Super Skrull. He's not in the Galactic Council in this issue, which I think is on the cast page, which I think is wrong, but in later issues, he'll be on there. And at this point, I think the Super Skrull is also the Emperor of the Skrulls, I believe.
Yeah, Clark,
the Super Skrull, which is the one we met recently in his debut in Fantastic Four. Listeners, you should check out our Lee and Kirby Fantastic Four coverage of one episode so far. And then the other thing I did want to say, Matt, is Annihilus, you know, we saw a lot of him in Fantastic Four. He was well done. One of the Marvel Cosmic events a few years before this was Annihilation. And in that, as the name might suggest, if I'm remembering right, Annihilus is like the big villain. And so it is interesting. This is Annihilus being folded into the Galactic Power fold, whereas in that earlier crossover, if I'm remembering right, it's all of these guys versus Annihilus.
Yeah, it was the
Annihilation Wave.
Annihilation Wave, yeah.
The reveal is that it's, spoilers, listeners, sorry, is that it's Annihilus behind the Annihilation Wave, which on the one hand, probably a cool reveal. On the other hand, you're like, oh yeah, I guess I should have seen that coming. Okay.
Who would have thought the guy named Annihilus would have the Annihilation Wave? Yeah.
It really surprises you. So listeners, that's really all I wanted to say about Avengers 18 was the cast page. To move on to Infinity number 2 Fall, we've got Jerome Apeña and Dustin Weaver are going to be our artists for Infinity's issues 2 through 5. They're trading off. We mentioned them both last time, I think. Apeña did the opening arc for Uncanny X-Force Apocalypse Solution that Matt really liked. And then I did look it up, and he also did the second half of the Dark Angel Saga for Uncanny X-Force. He didn't do much more than Apocalypse Solution, but he did a little more for Uncanny X-Force. And then I mentioned Weavers. He's worked before with Hickman on their S.H.I.E.L.D. book, which, Matt, is very much not what you would expect from a S.H.I.E.L.D. book, but I don't blame you at all for dodging a S.H.I.E.L.D. book.
Yeah, I'm not into S.H.I.E.L.D. that much. I'm not into S.W.O.R.D. either.
Yeah, S.W.O.R.D.'s a hard sell for me, too, mm-hmm. man. It's a hard sell.
And they're really trying to sell it in this comic, but this whole series, it doesn't work for me.
Well, Matt, on pages 10 through 11, we've got a sequence of the Black Order just absolutely owning the Marvel heroes. Do you want to run through some of those?
Well, we got Corvus Glaive, Bob. He impales Wolverine at the manor. You got Namor kneeling to Proxima Midnight. You've got Ebony Maw whispering to Doctor Strange. And you have Black Dwarf battling the Panthers.
This is pretty fun, especially because if you read it, in the past I've read it in the order I suggested Matt read it, but this time I read the Infinity and the Avenger stuff, and then I read the New Avenger stuff. And in reading this stuff without the New Avengers, you don't have any context for Namor kneeling to Proxima Midnight. You're man, did Namor give up that quick?
Proxima Midnight came in there and tore things up, Bob. They didn't even show it on the panel.
She just wrecked him. She just wrecked him. We'll get into some of that context on the next episode, listeners. We also have our man Corvus Glaive, Thanos' hype man, insulting Black Bolt, which is very cool. And then there's a subplot, Matt, that Smasher is falling in love with someone. And we'll find out who that is much, much later in the crossover. But did you think she was falling in love with someone particular at this point?
I kind of thought we were going to have this potential thruple again, Bob, between Smasher, Cannonball, and Sunspot. That sounds like it would make like a star or something if you put them all together.
Did you expect a love triangle, or did you expect a literal thruple?
Maybe a thruple, because it seems Sunspot and Cannonball have a thing. They're always hanging out shirtless.
That maybe set you up for confusion, because I was saying in an earlier issue we covered, I thought it was funny that watching Smasher and Sunspot interact. And the reason I think it's funny is because Smasher, spoilers, listeners, will get together with Cannonball.
Right.
And Sunspot is Cannonball's best friend. And so that antagonisms that wives and best friends sometimes have.
Right.
That really characterizes their relationship in the Hickman New Mutants issues. Okay. That's why I thought the early issues of that. I think we actually see Smasher interact with Bobby with Sunspot before she interacts with Sam Cannonball, and so I just found that ironic given where their relationship was.
By the end of it, like the last couple issues, it's revealed.
Well, Matt, an even bigger reveal, bigger reveal is that Thanos' son Thane is what?
He's inhuman, Bob. And on top of this is the whole reason Thanos is wanting to come to Earth, to find his kid so he can kill him. Infanticide.
Yeah, which is a very Thanos thing to do. It's a very nihilist Thanos thing to do.
Right. So just come to Earth and kill your kid and go home. Like, why do we have to have all this whole war and stuff?
Yeah, for sure.
Just go kill your kid in private. We don't have to have all this.
Yeah. Well, to keep moving, in issue number 19, Avengers 19, building towards collapse, we've got Jason of Spartax calling humans unwashed backward apes, and it's, well, man, you slept with us, though. Later, he betrays the war effort, so this is a big Jason being a douche issue, but yeah, Matt, without the context, I bet this
completely
fell
lost. I'm like, oh, man, that bearded gentleman is totally screwing over everybody.
And it is a little funny. You wonder if maybe like subtextually he's pretending to hate humans so much, both because he has sire and an heir with one of us,
right,
and also because he looks exactly like us. And so he's, oh man, I really got to show off in front of Gladiator and a Nihilist. At least they think me a human too.
Let me come put this helmet on and pretend I'm not talking to somebody important.
Infinity number 3 is Kingdom's Fall. I just wanted to lead off. We have an image in this issue of Captain America being rescued by Clert the Super Skrull. Just a very, very strange thing. Very strange
thing. It is.
Yeah. There are other tie-in books. I think I might have told you there aren't tie-in books. I was wrong. There are tie-in books, but they, from what I can remember, they don't matter at all. But we see a little bit of evidence of here. If we see the Thunderbolts and the Mighty Avengers, which, do you have any idea where the Thunderbolts are at this point, Matt?
Oh, not a clue. And I wondered this myself when I did look at the character page. I'm like, why are we highlighting us two other teams? And then they have the exact same image from this issue as the team.
That is actually what they do for the cast page, is they do take art from the book to make the cast page. I didn't realize it until they did it with Thunderbolts. At this point, the Thunderbolts are, there are so many different incarnations in Marvel. I think the Marvel Now Thunderbolts are the anti-hero team. So it's Elektra and Punisher and Red Hulk. That series, from my memory, was not very good, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm being unfair. I think Daniel Way wrote it. And then The Mighty Avengers is an Al Ewing book that, when we finish the Hickman run, I do want us to look at Al Ewing's Avengers runs, too, in part because the early ones tie into Hickman, and in part just because I like Al Ewing. But his team of The Mighty Avengers, it'll change a few times, but right now it's Luke Cage, Superior Spider-Man, White Tiger, and Monica Rambeau.
I know nothing to do with Thunderbolts.
But you recognize all four of these Mighty Avengers.
And though, the right? Mighty Avengers, Bob. I know who they are.
Like, they're the street-level Avengers. No disrespect to Falcon, Hawkeye, and Spider-Woman, but they probably should all be on the Mighty Avengers at this point, too.
Yeah, because they don't really do much in this. You see Black Widow shoot some guns sometimes.
Matt, what did you think of the big climax of this Infinity number 3, Kingdom's Fall?
Black Bolt opens his mouth, Bob, and he destroys Attila.
I think you say it Adelon.
Adelon,
Attilon,
Attilon, Adelon.
Attilon.
This is a big city thing.
Yeah. And this was supposed to be the climactic setup for the new Inhuman series, which the Charles Soule series does pick up on. Black Bolt destroys the central hub, and so the Inhumans have to live among the humans, but it also sets up something that we'll get to in later issues.
Right, and let me add to this too, Bob. I didn't get a chance to say this in Infinity Issue 1, but Infinity Issue 3 carries back up with, there's this Silver Surfer backstory at the end where Marvel tried to do this thing where they had digital comics and each panel is its own page.
Jason Latour wrote and drew these, right?
Yeah, I'm so glad this whole experiment, because DC tried the same thing and it failed.
Avengers number 20, we have The Offer. And to me, the main takeaway from this issue is we get the revelation, which maybe should have been obvious to me by this point, but never was that our ex-Nihilo is one of many ex-Nihili, and that all of the ex-Nihili have an Abyssi.
Yep, but he's the only one with an Abyssi.
I misspoke. They all should. All the ex-Nihili should have Abyssi, but the Builders program is broken down. This is, I think, part of the reason why they're going mad. And so our ex-Nihilo is actually the only one with an Abyssi. Exactly. Thanks for correcting me.
And in case you're wondering, guys, Abyssi is that character we talked about earlier that we couldn't figure out what the purpose was, and now we remember.
Now we remember. Yeah. But she's still, I think it's still fair to say that she's not that prominent to ex-Nihilo. No. Infinity issue number 4 is entitled Thane, after Thanos' son. But I did want to ask, you had to read Macbeth in high school, right? Do you remember Thane being a term from the play Macbeth?
Yeah.
It's basically a noble rank in the Scottish nobility. A Thane would basically be the equivalent of an English earl.
Okay.
Duke. I alluded to this in the prior issue, and yeah, Duke would be exactly right. But I alluded to this in the prior issue, but the destruction of, I guess, Adelon is how you pronounce it, results in global teragenesis. So you have the activation of all these other latent inhumans in the human population. And I remember being a little confused when I was rereading this, because I thought a lot of new characters came out of this, and in some sense a lot did, but it wasn't as many as I thought. I think the only three major characters who got ongoing series and who had any staying power that came out of this event are Kamala Khan, Ms. Marvel, Moon Girl, who hangs out with Devil Dinosaur, and then a guy you've probably never heard of, Matt, called Kid Kaiju, but he had his own series for a while called Monsters Unleashed.
Is Kid Kaiju a kaiju?
If I'm remembering right, he's a half-Japanese kid from Atlanta who can control kaiju.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
This is like more 2017-18. I think there's both a crossover called Monsters Unleashed, and then there's a very short ongoing series called Monsters Unleashed that stars Kid Kaiju.
I wonder if this whole Terrigen Mist thing was, I don't know if you remember this, but in like around this time, they were really trying to come up with ways they could get the X-Men into the MCU without completely overhauling.
Oh, Fox is still firmly in control of the X-Men. Mm-hmm. They're trying to replace mutants and the X-Men as a concept for the
right,
X-Men.
Using the Terrigen Mist. This sounds a lot like what they were trying to shoot for the MCU at one point.
For sure. This is also, they're trying to do, I don't know how conscious Hickman was in creating the Black Order for the Avengers film, or if the Avengers film guys just saw the Black Order and they're like, oh yeah, this is what we have to use. But they were very consciously trying to have Matt Fraction and Hickman and Charles Soule set up, no, these are stories with the Inhumans that they can use for the TV show that'll make the Inhumans the next big thing in the MCU.
Well, Bob, in this issue, we have a way that Thor takes out the bad guy.
Yeah, Matt. So Mjolnir is always supposed to return to Thor's hand, and that's always going to be a cool moment, especially when it does it by running through the torso of one of the builders.
He goes around the sun. He does the whole Star Trek 4 thing where they go around the sun with
yeah,
the hammer.
Yeah. He slingshots it, man.
Comes back down and then through the dude. It's insane.
The artist here does a lot of Thor hanging out with the Accuser Corps, which that's Ronan's crew, right? And so all the Accuser Corps have hammers. And so basically you could say that this World War II in space, it's just one big hammer party yeah. for Thor and the Accuser Corps.
It's hammer time, folks.
It's hammer time. It's hammer time. Matt, there's not much to say about Avengers number 21, Emancipation, but Infinity number 5 is the Left Hand of Death. And so we see Thane in his full-on supervillain costume, his full-on Thanos-style armor. It's yellow. Doesn't he remind you quite a lot of Sinestro from Green Lantern in DC?
He looks a lot like Sinestro here, to the point where it's all you need is a little mustache and you're good.
One of the things Hickman is doing here is also doing, granted, the Abnett and Lanning and Keith Giffen had already done this with the various Annihilation crossovers, but they are trying to do a Sinestro Corps war for DC with this crossover too, I think.
My thing is that Thane just gives in to Ebony Maw real quick. He's, hey, here's some armor. Just go step on that. And he goes in there and gets caught, and then he's surprised. I'm like, dude, what did you think was going to happen?
Man, Thane's name is pretty cool. And him being an Inhuman is a neat twist. But, man, he just doesn't catch for me.
He really
doesn't.
The
Black Order are so perfect embodiments of what Thanos would have as henchmen. But, I don't know, for some, with Thane, I just don't have a lot for Thane.
He seems lost.
Which is part of the point, but also just doesn't work, right?
No.
Well, Matt, a lot more to say in Avengers number 22. That's To the Earth. So when Sunspot is trolling Smasher and Cannonball into the Earth, did you still get Thrupple energy off that? Or by that point, was it clear that it was just Cannonball and Smasher?
I'm still getting that energy there. I think Sunspot may have a thing for Smasher. We just don't know.
To meet you halfway, what I believe is that Sunspot totally has a thing for Smasher, and Cannonball is a good enough bro that he would be open to the possibility if Smasher were open to the possibility, but Smasher just has no interest in Bobby DaCosta at all. That would be how I would read that. Maybe
go.
I'm being unfair.
That's a good way to frame it.
Well, Matt, speaking of something that's much less cool, my God, Matt, we see Falcon's spacesuit really for the clearest time on page 11 in Avengers 22.
In case you forgot, Falcon was in this book. He's got this ugly spacesuit, and it's a doozy.
It's crazy, man. It's crazy.
Don't make action figures of that, guys. That's just not that cool.
Well, listeners, I didn't really have us pick favorite art or favorite dialogue like we usually do because there was just no time, right? But I did want to give my favorite exchange in this whole crossover, which is in Avengers 22 on page 17. when they're finally getting the revelation that Thanos has invaded Earth, and Captain Marvel doing a little bit of helpful plot recap, Carol Danvers is like, Thanos did all of this to Earth just to kill his son? Does that make sense to anyone? And Annihilus is just like, yes. Yeah,
it does make sense. That's what Thanos does. He's insane. He's mad.
Annihilus would do too, man. Sometimes you just got to kill your boy, Matt.
Right. You just got to murder your child.
And it's important that you invade a world in order to do it.
And you have to pick the opportune moment to do it when they're in the middle of an incursion.
Well, Matt, another thing that's going on in this is we've talked about how Sunspot and Cannonball are a little bit our man on the ground POV, right?
Right.
But we also have Manifold, who's been very prominent as the teleporter for the squad, getting the squad in and out in the Cosmic War. And Manifold, who's a relatively new character, was just introduced in Hickman's Secret Warriors. He's having some doubts about war. And Captains Marvel and America, both being vets, basically are just telling Manifold, look, Eden, don't overthink it. You just go. You survive. There's nothing heroic. You just live and survive. And I thought that was a very nice moment. But then a couple pages later, Thor is, I love those two, but they're totally wrong. You have a destiny, bro.
Yeah, bro. You mean something, bro. You're not disposable. Did you expect him to die? I was waiting for that to happen. I'm okay. Manifold's going to die in this.
I knew Hickman was super attached to this character. Yeah. But now that you say that, it does seem that's really setting. Because of these four characters, only Manifold could die.
Yeah, and he's the one that made the statement.
And it would be the most tragic because right. He's the youngest and most inexperienced. Right. I do like how, Matt, your Thor voice gives me real Hulk Hogan energy. He comes up to Captain's America and Marvel and he's just like, doesn't work for me, brother and sister.
It's fate, bro.
My father, the Odin, he compels us.
I've seen the future. Get on the rainbow road.
Now buy my Thor beer, brother. So moving on to issue number 23, Matt, we've got To the Very End. Anything in particular you wanted to bring up from To the Very End?
Not really, Bob.
Yeah, not much for me either. We do see Iron Man in a spacesuit petting a Wakandan lion, which, if he has to be in that silly spacesuit, it's good that he'd be petting a lion.
That's something nice. Not too controversial.
Yeah. And then, Matt, I'm a huge mark for Shang-Chi. I love Shang-Chi. And I was really hoping he would take out Black Dwarf. But I get it. Black Dwarf, you got to big up Black Dwarf. You got to big up Cole Obsidian, right? He's going to be in the movie. He's going to be a threat. So it has to be Gladiator saving Shang-Chi and then Ronan executing Black Dwarf. And those were nice moments, too. But part of me, I was hoping the puny little human Shang-Chi would take down the Black Dwarf or Cole Obsidian.
Shang-Chi, I don't know. Shang-Chi, I didn't watch that film either. You watch that film?
I just like him. I haven't read enough of it, but I really like him from what I've read of his 70s and 80s comic.
Only thing I know is that he didn't need weapons, but then he got weapons.
There will be some nice moments for Shang-Chi, I think, later in this series, but also in the spinoff Avengers world. I think there's a couple of really nice moments for Shang-Chi, if I'm remembering correctly.
Well, Bob, we'll get the big issue, Infinity number 6.
Infinity number 6, Matt. Amber, the first thing I wanted to highlight was on page 17, we have the married couple of Corvius Glaive and Proxima Midnight, who I'd forgotten were married till rereading this series, but we see Hulk go against the happy couple, or the unhappy nihilist couple, as it were. That was a really cool fight.
It was pretty cool, Bob, I have to admit.
And then we see Maximus the Mad from the Inhumans get one up on Supergiant, and he uses a very Kirby-looking device to do it, which is very nice.
Right.
But, Matt, it's not Maximus the Mad who gets the kill on Supergiant. Who gets the kill?
The kill on Supergiant, Bob, is none other than Lockjaw.
Yeah, the Inhuman's dog, Matt. I always like to see the Inhuman's dog get brutal. And then, Matt, there's a page in this issue that is just so stupid that it doesn't bear thinking about, but I was just going to highlight it, is on page 28, we see Hawkeye using bows and arrows in space. What?
His core moment was at the very beginning of the series when he shot the Terra Tooth Tiger, or whatever I said it was called.
Terra Tooth Tiger. Yeah. Terra Tooth Tiger.
Shooting arrows in space is really, really stupid. Even with a spacesuit, it's still not going to work.
When you're Tony Stark and you're divvying up the Avengers and your contingency plans, why are you sending Hawkeye and Falcon into space, man? Don't make no sense. Well, Matt, a couple other great moments in this. We got Corvus Glaive talking trash to Hyperion. Hyperion says he's going to kill Corvus Glaive, and Glaive is just like, you can't threaten someone with what they really want, which is nice. And then we have Thor from off-panel calling down the lightning on Thanos. That's always cool when that happens. That is cool. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Matt, so we immediately get the Black Order decimated, right? We've got Corvus Glaive, Black Dwarf, and Supergiant all dead. And then we have Thanos and Proxima Midnight get Thane's Living Death, which is Thane's power, which admittedly, cool power, or at least a cool name for a lame power.
It is cool. And essentially, it looks like they're just in a box, though, trapped in time.
They're chilling with Terax down in the New Avengers basement, which we'll talk about more in the next episode.
Here's my question, Bob. If Ebony Maw's whole plan was to turn on Thanos, why did the Avengers have to get involved?
Well, maybe I'm wrong here, but I think Ebony Maw only turned on Thanos because Thanos was failing.
Okay. That's a good point. That's the piece I've missed somewhere in this very, very long crossover.
And it's a little bit silly to talk about the in-depth characterization of a character named Ebony Maw.
Right.
But if you'll humor me for a moment, I do like that all the other Black Order are just nihilists who serve Thanos. Right. But Ebony Maw, he's a survivor, right? He's a parasite. So if it's not Thanos, it's going to be somebody else. And I like that about Ebony Maw.
That is cool. So now he's hanging on his son.
In a way, it's the dark inversion of the relationship that Starbrand and Nightmask have. You now have with Ebony Maw being Thane's tutor in the same way that Nightmask is to Starbrand. That's where we leave off the Black Order. We also leave off in a meta moment where Reed Richards gives us a nice statement of purpose between the divide between the big Avengers and the Illuminati. And Reed's, yeah, the Avengers exist to build hope so we can build the unthinkable. I thought that was a really good line.
That is a good line. A
few closing thoughts. This is the first big crossover we've ever tried to discuss on the show, right? Any reflections on that?
It's a lot. It was a lot to read, for starters. And I'd be interested to hear, listeners, if you're out there, I know you don't like to leave your opinions that often, but we'd like to know, is this talk about these larger scale things, we don't go as in-depth, but we do cover a lot of material. Do you find that more interesting for us to talk about, or would you prefer us be more like single issues? Because I'm good either way. I didn't mind this as much. I felt like I read a whole year's worth of comics in one sitting. It was crazy. It was a great story. But as far as talking about it, there's just so much. We could have broken this into pieces if we really needed to. We could have just covered the prelude and then cover the actual Infinity and then the Avengers and the New Avengers separately if we wanted to. But I don't think you would have gotten the whole story.
This is weird because I like this story, but the only reason we're covering it is because it's in a larger run. Right?
Correct. Yeah, and it's a huge part of Hickman's run here. It's a big deal. Yeah.
Like we discussed earlier, there just didn't seem to be ways to break it down more effectively, so we just had to do one huge episode on it. Or we could have broken it down, but it just wouldn't have been worth it.
I would be interested, if we did other crossovers like this, it'd be fine, but I'd just be interested if listeners, if you like this format, it's different when we do crossovers this way. I don't know what other crossover we'd cover next if we were looking at one.
It is interesting to think of, like, what would we do with another big crossover like this? Because we covered DC 1 million once, and we might re-record that, but that was only 4 issues or something.
And didn't we do some of Hickman's X-Men?
We did, yeah, although that, in a way, that wasn't in a crossover.
Right.
But if we kept doing Hickman's X-Men, that would get us into crossovers. Mm-hmm. Listeners, I'm not really leaning to other crossovers, but if we did, I think most of them would tend to be, you could read one miniseries and that would be good. Whereas, I don't think there's any way you can read just the Infinity issues of this. Like, I don't think they've ever even been collected on their own.
No way. You couldn't. And there's no way you could just read New Avengers Volume 2. It's not going to give you anywhere near enough story. And then, or just reading the Avengers line, I don't think you would be lost.
You definitely can't with the Avengers. You can maybe get away with it if you were just reading New Avengers, but yeah, it's highly debatable.
I feel like if you just read New Avengers, it would be the equivalent of you being Hawkeye and just kind of knowing what's going on.
Like, you would become a Hawkeye.
You're just going to be like, okay, cool. The Avengers are up to something.
I do think this is sort of unique because I can't think of other crossovers. Well, I can't think of other company-wide crossovers where you have to read so many parts. Because you literally have to read about, what, 24 issues of comics here?
Correct, yes.
Whereas most crossovers, you can just read the main 12-issue series or the main 6-issue series. if we ever started doing X-Men or Batman or Superman crossovers, maybe we would get into more of this problem of it's a 20-part story and you have to read all 20 parts.
I could see that. I can't think of crossovers that are just gigantic either, Bob. What if we did 0 Hour?
0 Hour. All you would need to do would be to do
the main book and the tie-ins, yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't even need to do the tie-ins, right?
Yeah.
Because we didn't do the tie-ins on this in a real sense, right?
Correct. Because yeah. there were some smaller bits around.
There is a big clutch of Hickman's run called Time Runs Out that I also think we may just want to do all together. But I don't know. In that, at least it makes sense. It was originally collected in 4 different trades. And so it would make sense that we could just talk about the 4 different trades as if they were 4 different issues.
Okay.
At least in theory we could. I don't know. We'll actually have to look at it and give it some thought when we get there. I don't know. Well, I guess that's enough meta stuff for the listeners. But yeah, listeners, let us know what you think about that. And then, Matt, I did want to ask, since we put Infinity Gauntlet and Infinity together and Marvel published them together, did you wind up preferring Infinity or did you wind up preferring Infinity Gauntlet?
I preferred Infinity 100%.
Oh, you preferred Infinity. Okay. Right. Ultimately, in some ways, Infinity is a lot more ambitious. But I think I wind up preferring Infinity Gauntlet because it has tighter themes and it's more compact. If you look back at the rankings I did on Infinity Gauntlet, I definitely put Infinity Gauntlet over Infinity.
You did, but then you put Cosmic Odyssey over Infinity Gauntlet.
Which I do want us to look, because that's Starlin's DC Cosmic crossover. I do want us to look at that at some point. And that would be manageable, I think, just 6 or 8 issues.
I like the scale of Infinity, honestly. That's the big piece. The sheer number of characters involved and everything is just crazy.
That is the selling point, yeah, of having to see World War II as a cosmic crossover event, right.
Whereas Infinity Gauntlet got convoluted toward the end a bit.
For sure, for sure. Especially when you're just dealing with wave after wave of cosmic beings attacking Thanos. Matt, one other question I wanted to ask. Did you have any thoughts about what this crossover does or means for the whole Hickman run as you've experienced it thus far?
So when we last left, we had all these different things going on Earth causing the incursions. Are we still in? The incursions are still occurring, right?
We'll talk about that in the next episode when we get to New Avengers, where that's also not super headline there, but I think it's a little bit more implicit.
As far as where we're going from now after the crossover, you're still having to deal with the incursions. You still have these new members of the Avengers on the team. I guess Thane's out there somewhere. I don't know if he's considered a bad guy.
To be honest, I can't remember. I think Thane comes back and Time Runs Out, but now I'm no longer sure. I assume Hickman's going to do more with Thane in this Avengers run, but I don't remember. And it seems like the kind of thing you might have to get in some other book.
Right. And then when we do talk about next steps, we're going to talk about the epilogue in our next episode, right?
That was collected with Avengers Volume 5,
yeah.
Which is also, I think, if I recall right, is a pretty separate story.
It clarifies the idea. It talks about the idea of escalation. They dealt with the builders and those people, the Aliffs and all of them, but there's more.
We will see what develops with the Aliffs and the builders. Any other thoughts about Infinity before we call it a night?
Bob, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did. I thought you might, but then it's also like, oh God, it's just so many comics. Well, listeners, thanks for joining us on this trip through Infinity. Join us pretty soon for our follow-up episode on Infinity from the New Avengers perspective, and then we will keep on slogging through the Avengers run. Matt, is there anything coming up on the horizon media-wise we should be thinking about?
I don't know, Bob. Peacemaker just ended its season finale, and it's caused a lot of controversy. I haven't watched it yet, but plan on watching that today.
They reference a really surprising comic story at the end of it. Okay. I watched the finale last night. I don't know. If you want to do an episode on that, we can. I don't like the show or have much to say about it.
I mean, I've kept up with it. I just haven't watched the finale yet.
I got bored and stopped watching, and then I had to do some work last night or 2 nights ago, so I just mainlined. I was like 3 episodes behind, so I just mainlined 3 episodes 2 nights ago, and then I watched the finale last night.
You watched the 3 episodes. It probably could have been 1 episode.
I will say there's a lot negative you could say about James Gunn's Peacemaker. Why does this exist? Things of that nature. But my man does do 35 and 45 minute episodes. I'm not going to.
You appreciate that.
Matt, Noah and I are currently trying to watch Foundation on Apple TV. All of those episodes are hard 55, hard 59 minutes. I really appreciate them factoring the commercials run times. That's all I'll say.
All right.
Well, listeners, join us soon for more Avengers, maybe for Peacemaker, maybe not. We'll see. This has been Uncanny Tracks. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. The Infinite Podcast about Infinity has finished.
Thanks for listening.